Good morning and welcome to Conti's Law. I'm your host, Attorney Michelle Conti, your estate planning and tax legal concierge. This morning, we're going to discuss the importance of estate administration and what happens when you pass away. Now, most people have some form of a will or a trust which names an executor of your estate once you pass. But let's face it, most executors don't actually want that role. The burden of their responsibility if they're acting as the executor or even the administrator, and that's just a fancy way to say when you pass away without a will, who acts for you? But the burden of what their responsibility is can be lessened with a proper estate plan. And all that means is that if we put something in place and we name who gets your stuff, so who those beneficiaries are, keep in mind, it's a misnomer that if you're married or just because you are married, that doesn't mean that your surviving spouse necessarily gets 100% of your stuff. And when I say your stuff, it's your estate. And that can be anything from your real estate, your tangible personal property, those bank accounts, CDs, investments, retirement, life insurance. So there's a lot that goes into what makes up your estate. But that executor is very important, and their role is that of your legal representative. Their job is to protect your stuff and make sure it gets to the appropriate person or persons. If they really don't want to act or they're uncomfortable or they're unable for whatever reason, they can say no. They can sign what's called a renunciation and step down as that executor. And if you were proactive and named a backup executor, then that backup would immediately be able to act without any court intervention. Now, if you have a document that says so-and-so must act, and for anybody else to act, then the court must intervene and appoint the appropriate party. Now, obviously, that gets more expensive. Probate by itself is costly. It is timely. It takes, on average, a year and a half. And if somebody contests the will, or if there's not enough money in the estate to cover the debts of the decedent, then it can get more expensive and it can take more time. But let's start with the very basic beginning steps of what happens. That executor has to obtain the death certificate. And a lot of people ask if a copy is sufficient, and it's not. And the reason being is we need to provide that death certificate to the appropriate institutions, be it Social Security or the bank or the life insurance company. We also have to provide it to the court. The funeral home will ask you how many copies you would like. And it's better, just as a rule of thumb, get more. Because if we have to order more in the future, we can. It just may cost more. And it may take more time to get those later, as opposed to just receiving them from the funeral home directly. But one of the first things the executor does is contact, if the funeral home hasn't already, contact Social Security. And the reason being is if the decedent was collecting Social Security, we want to immediately notify them so those payments are turned off. Otherwise, we may have to pay the benefit back, and it may become more of a hassle than it's worth if we would just have done that originally. The next thing the executor has to do is find the original will or trust, if there was a will or trust. If there isn't, then Pennsylvania forces us to go through Pennsylvania's intestacy law. And that's a really fancy way to say Pennsylvania will dictate who gets what when you die, who gets what percentage. But Pennsylvania does not tell us who will act as the administrator or that personal representative once you've passed. That's when we have to get all of the legal heirs, be it spouse or children, grandkids, depending on who's left when you pass away, to sign off and agree on who will be in charge of the estate. If agreement cannot be made, then again, the court may have to intervene and become a part of that formality. So the next thing the executor does is find the will or the trust. Now, if you have a trust, the administration is much simpler, quicker, and possibly much less expensive than if you have a will. And the reason behind that is a trust generally avoids probate. Now, for those of you who aren't very familiar with this, probate is the court process whereby the court allows the decedent's name to be removed and the executor or the administrator to transfer that asset into their estate. So there now will be new identification numbers, new documents, legal documents that the court grants us, allowing those assets to be removed from the decedent's name, put into the estate account so that those beneficiaries can receive once the creditors of the decedent are paid, which will bring up another topic of what if there's not enough money to pay those creditors. And I'll answer that question after I give you our information. I have people who like to call in, who like to send over questions via email, and that's fine, and we encourage that. We can be reached at 724-784-0239. Our website is www.contilawpgh.com, contilawpgh.com. And I'll repeat our contact information several times throughout this show. But if you have a question, like I said, we encourage you to reach out to us. It's always better to be educated and to know what you may be getting into or what mess you may be leaving behind for your loved ones. With respect to that trust, one last point I'd like to make is that trust, in effect, never dies, even though you may. So if I have a trust in place and I dictate my terms as to when monies will be distributed to the beneficiaries, who those beneficiaries are. Maybe I don't think my kids are mature enough or responsible enough to receive the inheritance. So I can dictate from the grave when they get it, how much they get it, how often they receive that distribution. Other things we have to keep in mind: what if that beneficiary is collecting governmental benefits? And that can be Medicaid or Social Security, any form of federal or state benefits. We don't have to disinherit them, so to speak. We just want to make sure it's drafted in the appropriate way so that they get the best of both worlds. They'll receive the inheritance, which will supplement any benefits that they are also entitled to receive. So there's a lot that goes into this estate plan, which is a whole different show altogether. But without the appropriate planning, why not reduce tax consequences if we can? Why not reduce the time and the cost associated with the settlement of your estate if we can? So these are things that obviously need to be discussed prior to passing. Because once you pass away, now the burden falls to your executor, your administrator, to navigate through this legal world. Which leads me to my next tip, is I tell all of the executors, administrators, anybody involved, it is worth you seeking out somebody in that professional field, whether it be us or another estate administration attorney. It's very important that you have the appropriate guidance, because if you don't follow the steps, let's be honest, ignorance of the law is no defense. So if you don't pay the appropriate tax, or if you pay the wrong creditor in the wrong order, that executor may become personally liable if the estate doesn't have enough money to pay off other creditors. Another thing to think of is most of the executors I know, they're well-meaning people, and they just want to do what's right and make sure mom or dad's wishes are seen to. But oftentimes we see a beneficiary being pushy and asking that executor for an early distribution or trying to speed along the process of probate so that they get their inheritance sooner rather than later. So it's nice to have us in the middle as that mediator, so there's no bad blood between family. And we'll say, look, this is what we have to do. It's not the executor's fault. It's not the decedent's fault. This is just the way it works. And so we step in and we act as the bad guy, quote unquote, so that we can do this in the appropriate fashion. Again, we also want to make sure that you don't screw up. And I say that because we do this every single day. And there are little quirks with the law and ins and outs that you should be aware of. We want to make sure you take advantage of what the law allows us. So often, we'll have the estate make an estimated payment for inheritance tax purposes. And we do that because if we make that payment within 3 months of death, the estate will receive a 5% discount. So why not take advantage of that if we're able to? The number one question I'm asked by the executor very early on is, do I have to go downtown? Do I have to go to court? Do I have to go to the courthouse to get sworn in? What happens? And the answer is yes. If you're taking on that role as executor, yes, we have to go down to court. Yes, you have to get sworn in. But the process is fairly smooth and simple. We make sure that we're there with you and hold your hand and get the appropriate number of short certificates, which is the document that the court gives us stating who has been appointed as the executor, who now has the authority to make these decisions for the estate and to speak on behalf of the decedent. So yes, although you do have to go down and get sworn in, we have to get those letters, or what they're called. And again, they're just certified documents from the court saying that you now have the legal authority to pay the bills, to file the taxes, to manage and distribute those assets, to deal with the beneficiaries. You're going to have to close the accounts and reopen an estate account. All of this becomes time consuming, and it makes me chuckle because at the beginning of the process, I will speak with the executor and ask if they... for them to consider if they're interested in taking an executor's fee. And that executor's fee can range, and again, that's another show in and of itself, but it can range typically from 1% to 5% of the value of the estate. And more often than not, the executor will say, no, I don't want paid anything. I just want to make sure my parents' wishes are seen to, or my loved ones' wishes are seen to. By the end of that process, be it 6 months, 9 months, a year and a half, more often than not, that executor will ask the question, am I able to still choose to take the executor's fee? And it's because at the beginning, they don't understand or anticipate how much work goes into acting as the executor. I started the show by saying that most executors, if they know any better, they really don't want that role. And it's not because they didn't love the decedent. It's because it becomes, or it may become, like a second job. There's a lot of work that goes in, from paperwork to dealing with the creditors, dealing with the institutions that have the money, dealing with a realtor if a property is involved. What if the decedent has properties in different states? I have a client right now who speaks broken English. She's a wonderful woman, lives in the state of Washington. And her husband, unbeknownst to her, had for the past 10 years bought properties throughout the country. And so now not only did they have to probate his estate in the state of Washington where he lived when he passed and was a resident of, but he had properties here in the city of Pittsburgh, in Beaver County, in Lawrence County. He also had them sprinkled throughout the different states in the United States. So now we've been tasked with settling his estate in Pennsylvania. Another attorney's been tasked with settling the estate in North Carolina and Arizona and California. So a lot goes into it. And the executor has to facilitate and manage all of the different administrations. They don't necessarily, she didn't want to come to Pennsylvania, which is why we've been tasked with assisting her in doing this. It's very important that when we sit down with that executor, again, they would have the death certificate. They would have the original legal document, be it a will or a trust. But the biggest gift you can give that person you've now appointed as the executor is a list of what you have. More often than not, the loved ones will come in and say, look, I know mom had this bank account, or she banked with the credit union, or she had this CD. But as for any retirement account she inherited from dad, or life insurance policy, annuities, we don't know where they're at. And currently, there is no national database that I can log the decedent's Social Security number in and her assets pop up. That doesn't exist. And I'll tell you personally what I did. In my family, I run our financial world, so to speak. So I pay the bills. I have the passwords listed. You know, I know all of that. But God forbid if I passed away, my husband, Jason, he knows where we bank, of course. He knows where our investments are. But little things like online login information or the password tip and what that is, where all of the policies are, where are the printouts of the policy? I have my own business. Would he necessarily know what our business interests were, or what the succession plan of the business was? And it's little things like that that can really help the person you're appointing as the executor. Be it just that, look, I have three accounts at the local bank, or I have this investment advisor, contact them. So when we had our children and I went in, I have twins, and when we went in, I gave him a list, and it sounds so morbid, and people laugh, but it was a list that said, if I die, here's what you do. Here's who you contact. Here's a list of our stuff. Now, does he know it exists? Of course he knows it exists. But it's just having everything organized in one place. For my clients who have antiques or who have assets that are valuable, that are insured, that adds an extra layer to the settlement of your estate. So those are the things that you really should think about, whether they be in a list like I gave Jason, or in a safe deposit box under your mattress, just so that they're in one place. But ideally, the executor knows they'll act as the executor, and they know where you've kept the important documents. Again, I'll repeat our contact information. If any of this hits home, or you have questions or concerns about an estate you're attempting to settle, or if you want to make sure your loved ones don't fall victim to the pitfalls of what we're discussing, give us a call, 724-784-0239. Our staff at Conti Law is always willing to help. You can check out our website at www.contilawpgh.com. If you have a question you'd like us to address, feel free to shoot us an email, which is available on our website, but it's michelle@contilawpgh.com, Michelle with one L. And we'll be able to address that so that it gives you a little bit better understanding of what may happen. Another job that the executor has is to pay the bills and the taxes. So the estate, when you pass, is in charge of paying the debts, including any income tax, estate tax. So Pennsylvania has inheritance tax. There is no estate tax unless your estate is large enough and falls under the federal estate tax guidelines. And keep in mind, we're also tax professionals at Conti Law. So any tax questions you may have, feel free to send them over. But what happens if those debts exceed the assets? The potential beneficiaries or the people inheriting the estate, they're not liable for covering those debts. But it's important that prior to paying any of them, that the executor ensures that the estate has enough assets to cover them. Otherwise, you can't just willy-nilly pay out the bills that come in first. In Pennsylvania, we have a priority of creditor list. And so in that case, the probate judge must prioritize who gets paid and what amount they get paid. If there isn't a detailed accounting of what the monthly bills are or the income or the debts, then that's the job of the executor, figure that out. So we'll sit down with the executor and ask them to bring in the checkbook or bring in whatever type of balance sheet that the decedent had, if they can find one. But that's a great place to start. And the last bit of advice I can give to anybody is don't rush the process. Our natural inclination is to try to make everybody happy, appease them, distribute the assets. But keep in mind, if you rush the process and a crucial legal step is missed, you as the executor may be legally, personally responsible to pay those debts. You may have personal liability as the executor if you screw up and pay the wrong person first or the wrong amount. Most people don't know that, and that's why it's essential. It's imperative to have a legal professional help you through this process. And again, I see the worst in people, and I like to think that these things don't happen, but after the experience and what we've gone through with our clients, the worst comes out in people when there's money and death involved. Beneficiary disputes can become nasty. The court may have to get involved, but it's our job to try to nip those in the bud and help the executor facilitate this process in the most timely way, but also to appease all the beneficiaries and help them understand this is, in fact, a process. We have more and more clients who'll say, look, I know my kids aren't perfect, but once we pass, they will really step up to the plate and work together. Or I'll tell a horror story and they'll say, look, that would never happen with my kids. And I truly would like to believe that. I would. But I've seen fistfights break out. There have been cops involved because siblings don't get along or they have difference of opinions. Maybe somebody's disinherited for whatever reason. And it doesn't mean they're loved any less. It could just be, look, they're financially stable where this other child is not. Or maybe there's some sort of addiction issue. And we have to keep that in mind when we're going through this process. So if we have a big family meeting, which I recently did, and all the kids were lovely. Look, they're grieving the loss of a parent. And so we don't take it personally if a fight breaks out or if there's disagreements amongst them. But it becomes a very tense time. And if dad promises Joey something specific, and it can be something as simple as a sentimental asset, and Susie doesn't agree with that, or she said, wait, dad promised me that. Because most often it's those assets that they fight over. So if you say in your will, all of the tangible personal property would be equally distributed between the kids. That's fine and dandy. But if you promised a collectible or you promised something that has sentimental value to Joey, but then Susie wants that and you don't dictate who actually gets it, that can be a problem. So that's our job, is to make sure that we act as that mediator and we help everybody out through that process. Thank you for listening to Conti's Law. If you have any questions, reach out to us, 724-784-0239. Until next time, have a great day.